Our beloved Master, on one occasion, a monk asked Master Dogo, "Even if there is no cloud for thousands of miles, it is not yet the original sky. What is the original sky?" Dogo replied, "Today it is good to dry wheat." On another occasion, Dogo was once asked by another monk, "What is the deepest?" Dogo came down from his seat, made obeisance in the manner of women, and said, "You have come from far, and I have no answer for you." At another time, Sakiso Kaiso asked Dogo, "After 100 years, if someone asks about the absolute meaning of the universe, what shall I say to him?" Dogo called the boy attendant who came and told him to fill up the water bottle. Dogo waited a while and then said to Sakiso, "What was it you asked just now?" Sakiso repeated the question. Dogo thereupon went back to his room, and at this, Sakiso became enlightened.
Friends, first I am going to answer few questions from the Australian TV crew. They have been here for 1 month almost. When they had come, they were very serious people, as Australians are supposed to be. But this morning they filmed me and they have completely changed. They were smiling, laughing and enjoying. Ecstasy is contagious. It is dangerous to enter this gateless gate. But they are very nice people and very perfectionist. They have been doing a film on the commune, its lifestyle, its philosophical approach to existence, and of course on me, the spiritual terrorist behind the commune, or in other words, the center of this cyclone, which is going to grow every day bigger and bigger and is going to envelop the whole earth. When they will be going back to their home, their wives will be absolutely surprised. Whatever happened to these guys? The very air of the commune changes personalities. Your joy, your laughter, your blissfulness, your silence touches the very heart of anyone who is alive. And this morning I saw these people are not dead. They are really alive. So now I can trust that their film and their version for television is going to be a real shock. To the whole of Australia. If they can create the shock, I'm coming. Their first question is, are either communists or capitalists ready for the consciousness revolution of a spiritual terrorist like yourself? They are not ready, but I am going to make them ready. The time is ripe. They will have to be ready, because except they become more and more conscious and alert, the destiny of this earth is doomed. If anyone loves this earth, the beautiful birds and animals and human beings, if anyone has a sense of this tremendous phenomenon, because the whole universe is without any greenery, without any flowers, without any oceans, without any rivers, this place, this small earth, very small, has a special position in the world. In the whole existence, it is only this earth that has produced Buddhas, enlightened people. This earth has become holy. Just because so many Buddhas have traveled on it, and because the criminal politicians have come to the end of the rope, now they don't know what to do except create a war. To counteract, to create an atmosphere in the world against any possible war, the only way is to raise the consciousness of the people. I know perfectly well, neither capitalists are ready, nor communists are ready. But communists will be first ready, then the capitalists. Because the capitalists are full of vested interest. Soviet Union and the people living there have nothing to lose. They are equally poor. And 70 years of revolution have completely created a vacuum in their being. That vacuum can be filled only by meditative awareness. as I have told you again and again, nobody can live on negative ideas. The positive idea may be wrong, may be fiction, may be just a hope, a consolation, but still it fills your being. It keeps you unaware of the hollowness. But the negative idea does not fill your inner being. Negative means your fridge may be full of rubbish, junk, but still when you open it, it is full. When somebody starts believing in no God, in no heaven, in no hell, drops all fictions, all consolations humanity has lived for thousands of years, then suddenly he feels a great vacuum, a hollowness, a meaninglessness. Hence, I always give the priority to the atheist than the theist. The atheist is in every way ready. Just he has to be hit on the right point. He has no God. He has nothing to cling to. He is left absolutely alone by the communist ideology. That's what is missing in communist ideology. It cannot fill people's hearts. It cannot nourish their beings. Hence, the communists are going to be first to rise in consciousness. The capitalist has too much wasted interest. He has so many troubles and problems, so much money, so many businesses. He has no time even to look inside that he is hollow. I have heard about a very super rich man. When he died, then he realized that he used to be alive. But only when he died in his cave where he was buried, he realized for the first time, my God, I have been alive for 80 years and never thought about what it is. There are many people who realize only the value of life at the point of death, but then it is too late. Life keeps them engaged. The capitalist has too many things to remain engaged and involved. The communist has nothing. Hence, the great possibility that the communist may be ahead than the capitalist as far as consciousness raising is concerned. The capitalist goes on postponing. Even he sees the poverty he is creating, the beggars he is creating, the starving people he is creating, he goes on thinking that few reforms will do. A little more wages, little more facilities for the poor, for the proletariat. That's what I call socialism. Socialism is an invention of the capitalist mind to detract people from communism. Socialism is reformist. It is not revolutionary. And reforms can keep people hoping. It is a welfare state. It is just renovating the old house which is getting to fall any moment. Revolution means demolishing the old completely and creating the new, discontinuous with the past. I love always to tell a small story. There used to be a very ancient church, so ancient that even the priest was afraid to go inside. When there was a strong wind, the church used to wave like a tree. Any moment there was possibility that the church will fall down. So the priest used to keep his assembly outside the church, far away from the church, under the trees. But finally, something has to be done. So the trustees of the church met. They also met outside and they proposed few things to be done. First, the church is too old . A new church is needed. But this is how the reformatory mind functions. Their second proposal was, we will create the new church, but we will make the new church from the material, the doors, the bricks, the statues, everything from the old church. We will make the new church exactly the same as the old church with the same material. And their third proposal was, we will not destroy the old church first unless the new is ready. Now, how you can manage it? The reformist goes on patching things, covering wounds and cancers. Socialism is a renegade. It is a Judas. It is communist danger to the capitalists that they are proposing a new form, socialism. Sounds good, but the intention is very evil. And I am worried about Gorbachev because he is not using the word communism anymore. He is using the word socialism. Perhaps unconsciously, not being aware that socialism is a conspiracy of the capitalist world to prevent an international revolution that will transform the whole world into a communist world with equal opportunity to everybody to attain to his potential. And when the world is one, there is no need of any government. That's why Karl Marx says the state will wither away. But it can wither away only when the whole world is communist. I have every hope that because of the oncoming possibility of a third world war, if it happens, it will be the last world war and there will be no one left even to write the history about it. When Albert Einstein was asked, "Can you say something about the third world war?" his reply was amazing. He said, "No, I cannot say a single thing about the Third World War, but I can say something about the Fourth." The questioner said, "You can say about the Fourth and you cannot say about the Third? This is strange." Albert Einstein laughed. He said, "It is not strange. I can say about the Fourth that it will never happen. But about the Third, it is impossible to say. The calamity is so big that man has never seen such calamity. Within 10 to 15 minutes, the whole world, whole life, every living thing on the earth will be dead. And just America alone has enough nuclear weapons to destroy life on this earth 7 times. Although there is no need. Only one man, Jesus, is supposed to have been resurrected. And he also, I don't think, will be able to resurrect 7 times. One time, he managed to escape from the cave and befool the whole world. But 7 times, it will be impossible. He never went back to Jerusalem, because once he managed to befool, now it is impossible. If he is caught again, he will be crucified. What is the purpose of accumulating so many nuclear weapons and seeing the situation? Soviet Union has stopped creating more nuclear weapons. There are enough with Soviet Union also to destroy the whole humanity, all living beings. Now there is no point. They seem to be more intelligent that if you have enough nuclear weapons to destroy the whole world, why go on wasting money piling up nuclear weapons? And the totality of the war is a new phenomenon to be encountered. All wars were small, local. Even our Second World War was nothing compared to the possibility of Third World War. I call it a total war because it will be a total destruction of the planet Earth. This creates a certain situation which has never been there. The time is such, perhaps not more than 10 or 11 years. By the time it is 2000, most probably either we would have committed suicide or we would have change the whole human structure of the mind and raise the consciousness and created millions of meditators and thousands of Buddhas. That is the only alternative. War or meditation. War or a spiritual revolution. And the war has to be understood as a culmination of our whole human history. It is not coming from the sky. It is coming from our past, accumulating more and more anger, more and more violence, more and more weapons. First World War was smaller, second became bigger, the third is going to be total. Because it is a total war, every person has to understand his responsibility. In smaller wars, it was nothing to be worried. If it was going in Vietnam, who cares about Vietnam? Many people have not even heard the name Vietnam. If it is happening in Afghanistan, who cares? Small pieces of humanity were involved. But this time, it is the whole existence of life and all living beings with us, trees and roses and lotuses. And we are coming closer to the point where man can become a superman. Now, we cannot afford a war. We cannot afford a global suicide. We have to understand how to transcend the mind that the past has created and programmed for wars and destruction and violence. That's my whole work. How to erase the past from your mind and give you a present orientation to look at the reality with clean eyes. And your future will be golden. If your present is clean. Out of this clean presence will arise a new future which will not have any continuity with the past. It will be a quantum leap. And if communists are turned into a revolution for consciousness, capitalists will not be far behind. Just as they are not far behind as far as war is concerned, destruction is concerned, it is a competitive world. If communists turn towards consciousness, that will be a great impetus for the capitalists to be ahead of them. Nobody wants to be behind. So my whole strategy is the communists should be turned towards a revolution of consciousness, and that will become a Zen fire and a Zen wind going around the earth and turning everybody into a new competition that they have never known before. Who becomes the Buddha first? The second question, you have talked about the great Russian experiment. Can you talk about the great experiment of your commune here? My commune here is a far greater experiment than any communism. Communism was only an economic revolution, changing the economic structure of the society. It was very partial. That's why the Russians are feeling a little sad. Something is missing. A partial revolution is bound to fail. It is as if only one part of your body is healthy and the whole body is sick. What you are going to do with one hand healthy and the whole body sick? Revolution has to be total on every plane. Economic, social, psychological, spiritual. Unless it is a total revolution, man is going to feel himself crippled, as if your head goes on becoming bigger and bigger, and your body remains the same. Soon you will be in trouble. I have heard about a circus. The manager declared that now comes our last and greatest entertainment for you. Wake up, everybody. We bring to the stage our greatest dancer. So few people who have gone asleep woke up, sat down in their chairs, alert, the greatest dance. And then the curtain opened and they saw one woman lying flat on her chest on the floor. They could not think what kind of dance is going to be happening. And then finally the woman tried hard to get up. Her breasts were so big that just to get up was the dance. When she stood up, everybody was clapping. They had never seen such a dance. The woman was doing a miracle. Her breasts were still touching the earth. And the manager came and he said, "Have you seen the dance?" And people laughed and they said, "It is really the greatest dance we could have ever imagined." partial revolution is not revolution. Only the total revolution, and total revolution has to arise from your very center. That is my work here. I want every individual to clean the past from his mind completely. All his prejudices, all his thoughts, political, social, religious, everything has to be dropped. Just a clean slate. And you have arrived to the space of no mind. No mind is meditation. And no mind is the revelation. And no mind is the greatest rebellion that has ever happened in the past to only very few people. A Gautam Buddha here and there. Thousands of years pass and then comes one person who blossoms into a Buddha. But now there is no more time. You cannot postpone for tomorrow. Whatever you want to do has to be done now. For the first time, present is becoming more and more important. Each day, you are coming closer to choose the alternative, either to move towards becoming a Buddha or move towards becoming a corpse. I don't think anybody wants to die. Particularly when the whole life is at the risk. This Third World War cannot happen. We are going to prevent it. Our ways are very different. That's why I love your expression for me, a spiritual terrorist. I don't have any weapons, I don't have any nuclear missiles. But I have something greater and something far more effective. It is not to kill. It is to bring life to those who are living almost as if they are dead. It is bringing awareness to those who are behaving like somnambulists, walking in their sleep, talking in their sleep, not knowing exactly what they are doing and why they are doing. I want people to be so awake that their whole consciousness goes to the deepest part of their being and also to the highest peak. A vertical growth, just like a tree grows. Its roots go down into the earth and its branches spread towards the stars. Its blossoms flower into the sky. Its nourishment comes from the deepest part of the earth. It is always balanced. Higher the tree goes, deeper the roots. You cannot have a cedar of Lebanon, 400 or 500 year old tree, rising so high in the sky, with small branches, with small roots. It will fall down immediately. Life needs a balance between the depth and the height. I teach you both simultaneously in your entering to the center. In meditation, you are growing your roots deeper into the cosmos and bringing the Buddha out from the hidden center is bringing your fragrance, bringing your grace, bringing your ecstasy higher, where it can blossom into the sky. Your ecstasy is a movement towards the height, and your meditation is a movement towards the depth. And once you have both, your life becomes a celebration. That is my work, to transform your life from a sad affair into a celebration. If we can fill the earth with laughter, there is not going to be any war. If we can teach the soldiers to tell jokes to the enemy, there is not going to be any war. They will throw their guns and sit down and share jokes. And when somebody is telling a joke, can you kill him? When he is bringing laughter to you, can you destroy him? Every man now is responsible to create a Buddha field around himself, an energy field that goes on becoming bigger and bigger. Create as many vibrations of laughter, joy, celebration, dance, sing. Let the whole humanity by and by catch the fire of Zen and the wind of Zen. Nobody is really interested to be sad. Nobody is interested to torture himself. It is your religions and your politicians who go on making you sad and miserable. Because in your misery is their whole business. If you start laughing, if you start dancing, throwing the gun away, if you take up a guitar, Jesus says to his disciples, carry your cross on your shoulders. I said, don't listen to such nonsense. Carry your guitar on your shoulders. And fresh and fragrant laughter on your lips. Make this whole world a merry-go-round. You don't have that word. You have the word sorry-go-round. I have to create language for you. Just your laughter will be enough to prevent the war. Your celebration, your dance will be enough to prevent the war. Your ecstasy, your meditation will create a tremendous force which will be far higher because it is life affirmative. Your religions are life negative. Your politicians are life negative. Your religions prepare you for beyond life. Not to live here joyously. and your politicians create weapons to kill you. Politicians kill you and priests console you that don't be worried, after your death you will be entering into paradise, beautiful women and rivers of wine, no prohibition, no marriage. Have you ever heard that in paradise there are marriages? I am creating a paradise here now. I don't wait for death. Why should one wait for death? And if after death there is going to be a paradise, please prepare for it. Be ready for it. Enjoy here so that you can enjoy there. Only those who are capable of enjoying here and dancing here and singing here and loving here will be able to enjoy the paradise, not your saints, only my people. Your saints will be sitting there, miserable, not looking at beautiful women with closed eyes, shrinking in themselves. And what to do? There is no water available, only wine. And all around, beautiful women, naked, dancing. One Hindu saint, few years before, Swami Muktananda died. You must have heard his name. Many of you may have seen him. But you don't know what happened in paradise. One of his disciples was so miserable because his guru has died, so he committed suicide. He wanted to go with the guru. He reached just a little late, but he reached. And what he saw, he could not believe his eyes. He saw Muktananda lying naked under a tree, and on top of him an American actress, Marilyn Monroe, making love to Muktananda. He could not believe that Muktananda was always teaching celibacy. In his book, Chidvilas, Play of Consciousness, he describes his discipline of celibacy. Came to such a point that his prick will rise so high that it will touch his navel. The disciple has read it, and what he is doing, has forgotten everything, but anyway, he is his master, so he has to pay his reverence. He did not look what is happening. He just touched his feet and said, Baba, I think this must be the reward of all your virtues. And Marilyn Monroe said, you idiot, this is not the reward for this idiot. This is punishment for me. I want you to prepare. because paradise is going to be really great, far out. But you have to be ready. So love, drink, dance. This is the preparation, the discipline for entering into paradise. I am an utter hedonist. And only hedonist has the right to enter into paradise. People who are masochists, torturing themselves, they need to go to hell. Because there they will not have to torture themselves. Devil and his whole army will torture them. That will be their joy. Hell is for saints. Heaven is for sinners. This is absolutely logical. This is my revolution. Once we enter into heaven, we are going to throw out all the saints into hell. You enjoy torture, get torture. We enjoy luxury, we enjoy every comfort. Let us possess the paradise. You have lived here long enough, just get out. I am not going alone, you are all coming with me. I am a lazy guy. I will be still going, sitting in my chair. If Muhammad can go riding on his horse, what is wrong? If Jesus can go directly alive, and pulls his mother also afterwards, what is wrong? Perhaps I may reach a little earlier than you, because my podium is a little higher. But you won't be too late. I will greet you there. Ha! So you have arrived. Now do the work. Throw out all these saints towards hell. They deserve it. They have been disciplining themselves for it. We have been disciplining ourselves for the paradise. Our whole expertise, our whole specialization is to possess the kingdom of God. And the third question is from a sannyasin. A sannyasin has asked, I cannot help feeling shocked at the idea that since people have to die anyway, there is no harm in them dying by the thousands to preserve communism. What is it that horrifies me about this? It is not only you, there may be few more who have been shocked. Mazid is sitting there. He must be shocked. And other Italians. Because they have a political prejudice in their minds. They think they are radicals and they don't understand even ABC of radicalism. When I said that Joseph Stalin killed 1 million people to save communism, you did not give much thinking. Who were the 1 million people? Those were the people, priests, bishops, cardinals, archbishop, and they were not ready to give away the possessions of the church to the society. These were the peoples, rich or poor, it does not matter, who resisted revolution, who wanted their things to be theirs. That those things may not be much, a house, a little piece of land, maybe few trees, maybe few cows or horses. But for centuries man has been programmed to possess and to go on possessing more and protect and defend whatever you have already possessed. So these were the people who were obstacles into revolution. And the revolution was for 20 million people in Soviet Union. And at that time, the idea of revolution was not national. It was an idea of international revolution. You will be surprised to know I was very small when I became acquainted with a man, one of the most intelligent men I have come across, who was with Lenin and Trotsky in the Soviet Revolution. His name was Manvendranath Rai. He was one of the members of the international commanding body of the communists, the Politburo. He was the only Indian who ever rose to that status. And he fought in the revolution hand by hand with Lenin. And after the revolution, he thought that now my work is in India. I have to go and create a revolution in India. But here he found in utter difficulty, because the Hindu mind is more possessive than any mind. It talks about non-possessiveness, it talks about celibacy, it talks about morality. But always remember, people who talk about these things are the people who are suppressing just the opposite. A person who praises celibacy knows perfectly well that he is not celibate. People who are greedy, their religion will be teaching no greed. Otherwise, why religion should teach no greed? For 5,000 years, from Manu to Yajnavalka, to Buddha, to Mahavira, to Mahatma Gandhi, the whole teachers of this country are telling people non-attachment. Why? Certainly people are too much attached. Otherwise, their whole history is the teaching of non-attachment. People must be greedy, hence the teaching, no greed. People must be violent, hence the teaching of non-violence. Always remember this as a fundamental. Look at the teachings of the scriptures and you will know what kind of people were. Just the opposite. Otherwise, there is no need. Why Buddha goes on telling people whole his life, 42 years after his enlightenment, that don't be attached to things, be non-possessive. And the same continues. When Amun-Ra came to India, he found himself in an absolutely different world. He was thinking that because everybody has been teaching non-possessiveness, communism will be the easiest thing in India. This is where logic fails. He has read, he has lived his whole life in the West. He has only read about Indian scriptures that they teach non-possessiveness for centuries and centuries. People must be ready to give all their possessions to the collective. They will not have much difficulty in dropping their private possessions. But when he came to India, he was utterly surprised. Nobody was ready. The very word communism was anathema. And because he was a well-educated man, well-dressed, used to smoke cigarettes, the Indian mind absolutely turned against him. Mahatma Gandhi crushed that man who was far more intellectual, far more significant than Mahatma Gandhi himself. But Mahatma Gandhi crushed him because people would like Mahatma Gandhi half naked. It appeals to the people that this is a Mahatma. And what kind of Mahatma is this who is smoking cigarettes? Is well dressed in a poor country. Nobody listened to Amun-Ra. Perhaps I was the only person who became very deeply interested in him. It was just by chance I had met him in a train. I was going for my studies from my village to the bigger city to join a university. And just on the platform, we were both waiting for the train because in India, no train ever arrives in time. Only one time it has arrived. In my experience, 20 years I have been traveling in trains continuously. Only one time in Allahabad, the train arrived exactly 6 o'clock in the morning. It was a miracle. I ran to thank the driver and I told him that you have done it. I was waiting that someday somebody will bring the train in right time. He looked very ashamed. I said, why you are looking ashamed? He said, this is yesterday's train. By that time, the conductor has come and the station master has come. I asked the station master that this seems to be stupid if every train is going to be late. why publish the timetable? He said, timetable is absolutely needed. Otherwise, how we will know how much the train is late? So the timetable is published in India to know how much the train is late. I said, that seems to be absolutely right. The train was late and I was sitting on the bench and Amon Ra came and sat by my side. I was reading a book by Lenin, his collected works. He was surprised because I was too young. May have been 17 years old. He looked at the big volume and he asked me, where you got this collected works of Lenin? I said, I have got the whole library of Marx, Engels, Lenin, Stalin, everybody. He said, you are the first man. I have been here for 7 years continuously trying. Are you a communist? I said, right now I am nobody. But who knows, I may turn out a communist. I am looking in every direction without any prejudice. Whichever dimension fulfills me totally, I will be that. Communism is my study. I am not a communist. I have to study many more things before I can decide. I have to look into anarchism, I have to look into socialism, I have to look into capitalism, I have to look into spiritualism. Before that I cannot say anything, I am just a seeker. We became friends. He talked about his experiences in the Soviet Revolution, and he became a constant visitor to my small house. I was living outside the city in a very small house because nobody was ready to take that house because it was known as haunted by the ghosts. So when I asked the owner, he said, without any rent, you can live there. At least somebody lives there, may create the idea in people that it is not haunted. Somebody, a small boy is living there alone. So he said, it is good. If you need anything, I will support you. I want to sell it. Neither I can sell it, nor anybody is ready to rent it. And I myself am afraid. My wife is not willing to go with me. Otherwise, we can sell this house. That house is in a very beautiful location. It was absolutely alone. For miles there were no houses. And behind was the beautiful Satpura mountains. It was so peaceful there. He said, I purchased it just to live there, but nobody is willing, so you start living. I started living, but I continued to create the fear in everybody that it is haunted by ghosts. Because if somebody purchases it, I will be thrown out. The owner heard that I go on creating the rumor. He came to me that this is strange. I gave you free of charge. I said, I will keep it free of charge. But remember, it is haunted with ghosts. Don't come here. Whenever you want me, just phone me. I will come. It is dangerous. He said, and it is not dangerous for you? I said, I know few secrets about ghosts. They are afraid of me. Do you know anything? He said, I don't know. I said, you simply go back. And I lived in that house almost for 10 years. Without any rent. On the contrary, I will order him that send me something and he will bring it. Otherwise, I will leave the house. Amon Rai used to come. He loved the place. He used to live in the Himalayas in Nainital. But he said, even there it is too crowded. Too many people have come. Roads, airports, buses. It is no more the old Nainital I used to know in my childhood before I left India. But your place, I said, this place will remain as it is as long as I want to live in it. For miles nobody can make a house. Not only the house is haunted, the whole area is haunted. I went on creating the rumor and making the area bigger. Nobody was ready at the cheapest rate to purchase the land. When I talked with Amon Rai, he said, what do you think is my cause of unsuccessfulness? I was too successful a member of the international high command of the communists. I fought in the revolution. I was a close friend of Lenin and Trotsky, who were the architects of the revolution. And here, I am nobody. Nobody is ready to listen. I said, here you will have to change. You will have to be a hypocrite. You will have to smoke in your bathrooms, not in public. In public, speak against smoking. You will have to wrap a small cloth just covering up to your knees, just like Mahatma Gandhi, or even a smaller will be better. Shave your head and become a Mahatma. And I can manage everything for you. First, become a Mahatma. I will call a barber here and he will make you a Mahatma. He said, my God, first I have to become a Mahatma. I said, without becoming a Mahatma in this country, you don't have any appeal. This country is so fucked up. That first you have to pretend all kinds of things. You don't drink tea. If somebody sees you drinking tea, finish. You are not a Mahatma. In cold, you have to remain half naked. You will get accustomed, don't be worried. All the animals are accustomed. And you are an intelligent animal. So you will get accustomed. It is only a question of 2-3 years. And then heat or cold, all are same. Because your skin becomes thicker and thicker. And your skull also becomes thicker and thicker. You will be a Mahatma. Everybody will be listening to you. He said, I cannot do that. I said, then forget all about leadership. And he died an unknown man. If he had lived in Soviet Union, he would have been a cabinet minister. This country is so prejudiced. Your question comes out of a prejudice. You don't understand the mechanism, the dynamics of life. Adolf Hitler, Benito Mussolini, Hirohito of Japan, all three together killed 30 million people and for no purpose at all. Just a personal egoistic desire to become the whole sole owner of the earth. Genghis Khan, Timur Lane and Nader Shah, three generations of one family. Amongst these three, they killed 100 million people for no purpose. And you don't bother about these people. How many people Napoleon killed? And how many people Alexander killed? And how many people Catholic Church has killed? You don't bother about it, and for no reason. Stalin was not killing for any personal reason. And he was not killing those who were ready to understand the revolution and participate in it. He had to kill to remove all obstacles from within, because he was surrounded from all around by enemies ready to enter and finish. If he had to face both the enemies inside and outside, there was no possibility of that experiment ever to succeed. And the people he killed, don't think they were individuals. They were just robots as the masses are. No individuality, no dignity, no understanding. Just a greed and lust in the old mind that my things are mine. I will not give them to the collective. And he is miserable because what he has is not enough for his own nourishment or his family. But he is not ready to make a collective land where tractors and bigger mechanisms, where aeroplanes can be used to sow the seeds. When the land is miles long, helicopters, aeroplanes can be used to sow seeds. Tractors can be used to prepare the land. In a small piece of land, this is not possible. Whatever communism was saying to them was absolutely correct. But just their prejudices. And when I said that it does not matter, everybody has to die anyway, I mean it. Unless you are a Buddha, it does not matter. Only the death of a Buddha matters. What you are going to contribute? What you are going to do tomorrow, except repeating today. You can live for 30 years repeating the same circle, morning till evening, evening to morning. What is the point? Where are you going? Round and round, reaching nowhere. For these people, The experiment of communism was not at all important. Their own prejudice was important, that our things cannot be taken away by anybody. And those things were their misery. Even a beggar was not ready to give his things and what he had. And the whole idea was that the whole land, the whole property, everything in it should belong to the collective. Soviet means a commune. The village turns into a Soviet. It becomes a commune. Families disappear. Only individual members contribute whatsoever they can. And the commune will fulfill their needs not according to their work, but according to their needs. Somebody may not be that hard worker, and somebody may be a hard worker, but in a commune, it is a bigger family. You have to understand that somebody is weaker, somebody is sick, somebody is old, but their needs have to be fulfilled. Now Gorbachev is saying, each according to his work. What about the old people? They will not be able to work the same way as the young people. What about the children? They will not be able to work the same as the young people. What about the women? They cannot be put into any muscular work. Communist idea was far higher and superior. Each according to his need. A old man has his own needs. He may not be able to work, but he has worked enough his whole life. A children has not worked yet, but one day he will work. But he has needs right now. Now he is saying, each according to his work, and that is the motto of capitalism. He is deceiving and betraying the whole communist approach. Just think, Mazid is here. If revolution comes to Italy, are you going to allow the Pope to continue Vatican? Are you going to allow the Vatican Bank to change black money, heroin money, into white money and earn billions of dollars per year? Are you going to allow all the priests and bishops and archbishops and all the churches to continue as they are? They all will resist because it is their vested interest. Then what you are going to do? Just to sit before the churches and cry like small babies? You will have to finish these people or throw them out in the ocean. And you have such a beautiful ocean. Revolution does not care for these parasites. It is against these parasites. And these parasites will create every kind of difficulty for you from inside and from outside. Now Catholics are 600 million around the world. If you do anything against the Pope, he will fight, and the 600 million Catholics around the world will create great pressure on you from every government that don't touch Vatican. Otherwise, we will disconnect our relationship with you. That's what had happened in Russia. All countries dropped their connections with Russia. All countries called their ambassadors back. No communication with Russia. Boycott, absolute boycott. You have only heard one side of a story which America goes on propagating, that Stalin created an iron curtain. It was not Stalin who created the iron curtain. It was all the countries who withdrew from Soviet Union. By cutting it completely, then it was absolutely necessary that Soviet Union should create a situation that nobody enters in. All kinds of agents to provoke people, and people were ready to be provoked because they were very sad that their personal things have been taken. People become so attached with their personal things, small things. They were ready to be provoked, and the whole country was full of detectives from every capitalist country to provoke people, to destroy the collectives, to burn the collectives. All Christian different sects agreed on the point that communism is against religion. All the Mohammedans, all the Buddhists, because Soviet Union has three religions. One part of Mongolia is Buddhist. The other part near Afghanistan is Mohammedan. The third part is Orthodox Christian. Now these three religions were agreed that communism is against religion, we have to give a fight. And the people have belonged to any religion. Everybody had belonged to some religion, either to Buddhist, either to Mohammedan, or to Christianity. How to deal with the situation? I don't see that except Stalin there was anybody else in the Communist Party at that time to deal with the situation. And the poor fellow has been condemned because he saved communism. Otherwise these people would have destroyed it. It was a chaos. Once Tsar was killed, there was no system, there was no order in the country. Trains were running. Nobody knew where they will end up, where they are going, because people have taken out railway lines, has dropped the bridges. Trains were moving, burning. These were the people for whom the revolution has been done, who were burning the trains, who were burning the palaces of the governors, who were burning the palaces of Tsar. And the Communist Party was trying that now all these belong to you, don't destroy them. Tsar is finished, it is your property. But nobody was listening. And people were carrying things to their home. I have heard that as Tsar's family was taken out from his palace, which used to be one of the biggest palaces in the world, richest, it was one of the oldest royalties, people were taking everything to their home from the palace. Even the carpet, it was so huge that nobody can take it alone. So people were cutting the carpet with scissors, just enough for their home. Take away. Now what you do with these people? There is no time to convince them, there is no time to make them understand that this everything belongs to you and you are destroying it. Except Stalin. Neither Lenin was able to do it, nor Trotsky was able to do it. This man has certainly a heart of steel. At any cost, revolution has to survive. And as I have told you again and again, masses are the greatest enemy of themselves. They don't know what they are doing. So the bullet was the only answer. And he killed for an absolute right end. And there are times when you have to means which are apparently wrong. Violence, murder. But what can you do with this humanity? If you are in power, you will suddenly realize that the only way is to put people to their senses. When one person is killed, 100 persons absolutely understand that this is a difficult problem, keep quiet. Those 1 million people killed made 20 million people silent, settled. But you have your prejudices. You are soft, but that is my business. When I was criticizing Christianity, you were not soft, you were happy. Now let the Christians be happy. Everybody has one's own time. Catholics would have been shaken, they had been shaken. The whole seminary, which consists of 500 missionaries being trained and must be at least 100 professors to teach them, was agog with only one thing, that they want to hear what I have said. And one student came here the next day, that the whole seminary is talking only one thing. So you bring the tape or the video. And I had sent Prasad, because he had already been to the seminary to talk to them, explain my philosophy to them. So he was acquainted with the authorities. He went there, but the authorities said, because we don't have equipment and it will take time to arrange for equipment, so we cannot do it. Prasad said, don't be worried about the equipment. I will bring the whole equipment with me. Then they changed immediately. They said, but first permission from higher authorities is needed. It was not needed before. Now the permission from higher authorities is needed. Next day he reached, that has been permission granted. They said, we are waiting. And finally they phoned that you don't have to come here. We hope that within 2.5 weeks permission will be obtained. And I don't think it will be obtained. It is just delaying process. After 2.5 weeks, again, and who are the higher authorities? They live there in the campus. It takes 2.5 weeks to reach their bungalow. And they come every day to the office. But you were not worried. Somebody else was being hit and you were enjoying. Now it is your turn. Let others enjoy. And I am against every kind of prejudice. This is just a prejudice. If you understand the practicality of it, you will not be against it. Theoretically, you can go on and on thinking about it that 1 million individuals, forget that word, there are rarely an individual. 1 million phonies who were obstructing a revolution which was going to be one of the greatest experiments in human history. It was worth. And when I said, anyway you have to die, I immediately could feel that you became very much shocked. But I still repeat, anyway you have to die. Don't die against revolution. If you have to die, die for revolution. Don't die for the status quo. If you have to die, die for rebellion. Everyone has to die. And as far as I am concerned, whether Stalin kills them, or Adolf Hitler, or Mussolini, or Hirohito, it doesn't matter. He only kills the body. The soul immediately gets into another woman's womb. Nothing is killed. Only houses are changed. Do you think those 1 million people are finished? Many of them may be here. If not now, soon. To me, these people seem to be absolutely absurd who are against violence and still talk about eternal life. Their contradiction they don't see. If life is eternal, then death does not matter. Life will continue in new forms. Somewhere else, if not in Soviet Union, then in China. And if you are killed in China, then India is always available. From where do you think all these Indians go on growing? Hitler kills, Stalin kills, Hirohito kills, whoever kills, India's population goes on growing. India gives ready-made wombs to everybody. People may be dying of starvation, but they brag that they have 20 children. So what is great about it? Look at a bull. A bull has thousands of children. So do you think the bull is greater than you? And poor people are bound to produce more children because they have no other entertainment. By the evening, they don't have electricity, they don't have television, they don't have too much to eat, that their bellies become too big and they cannot reach the woman. So the whole dark night and cold, not enough blankets. The woman is warmer. It's a good blanket. And no other thing to do in the dark. So people go on producing children. They cannot go to see the film, it takes money. They cannot go to have a dinner in a restaurant, it takes money. Sex is free. So everywhere you kill, India is ready to receive. From 400 million people, just 40 years before, today there are more than 900 million people. It seems every year 1 million people are increasing. By the end of this century, the population would have gone beyond 1 billion people. From where all these people are coming? Richer countries, educated countries are losing population. Because educated people understand this is stupid, creating people and making the country poorer. They are using all kinds of methods to prevent the explosion of population. In spite of all the popes and the bishops, who cares? These people, even Catholics don't care. It is just a formal respectability. But there are countries which are promoting programs for giving more birth to children. Their population is shrinking, and the fear is they may disappear in a vast third world population which is going on, soon they will be rushing all over Europe. No boundaries will be able to prevent them. Already in Germany that is the problem. From Turkey, so many people have entered into Germany that a great problem of unemployment is there. And you will be surprised to know that Nazi party of Adolf Hitler is again raising its head. One of Adolf Hitler's men has won 11 seats to the parliament just now. On the question that all these Turkish people should be thrown out of Germany, otherwise Germany will be drowned. Adolf Hitler was throwing away Jews, now it is the Turkish people. And he has won 11 seats. This is the beginning. And while people have supported an ex-Nazi officer, because German people are becoming afraid that if these populations go on immigrating to Germany, we will be poorer. We will have to give employment to these people. We will have to share our money with these people, our land with these people, our houses with these people, and this caravan of immigrants is going to grow every day. Because Mohammedan countries allow one man to marry four women. So Mohammedans increase four times more than anybody else. You can create only one child in a year at the most, with great difficulty. Mohammedans can create four children. That's why in India, just 40 years before, Mohammedans took away Bangladesh and Pakistan, and within 40 years again, they are the greatest Mohammedan country in the world is India. Not Saudi Arabia, not Pakistan, not Bangladesh, nor any other Middle East countries. The greatest Mohammedan country is India. Second to Hindus are the Mohammedans. And soon they will be the first. Because they have four women and you have only one. And in the name that you should not interfere into anybody's religion, the government allows Mohammedans to have four wives and to Hindus only one. This kind of stupidity can be prevented only if you are really hard. I would like the population explosion in India to be stopped on a war scale. The whole army should be sent to every village. And if people are not ready voluntarily, then compulsory they have to be sterilized. And you will call it is not democratic. But is it democratic that 500 million people will die by the end of this century? Problems are very connected. Whenever you look at a problem, look from all sides. And you will be able to understand what I am saying. And drop your preconceived ideology. My effort here is to bring you to a space of no mind. And from no mind function. Then you function directly looking at the situation. Whatever is right immediately arises in you and you do it. Neither it is a question of morality, nor it is a question of religion. It is a question of immediate response to a situation. And immediate response comes only through meditation. And I shock your mind on purpose. And I go on finding ways. I will not leave anyone. People are wondering. Jews are wondering that maybe our turn is coming. Wait. It will come. I'm going to speak against all ideologies of the past. all moralities of the past. I am against the whole past of humanity. In toto, I don't make any exception. I want a totally new man to arise on the earth, the Superman. The Sutra. Our beloved master, on one occasion, a monk asked Master Dogo, even if there is no cloud for thousands of miles, it is not yet the original sky. What is the original sky? Dogo replied, today it is good to drive it. This is the way of Zen. Don't waste your time into unnecessary theoretical things. That although there are thousands of miles, no cloud, but this sky is not the original sky. Because beyond this sky, there will be another sky, and beyond that, another sky. Where is the original sky? But Master Dogo said, forget all about it. Today it is good to drive it. The day is sunny, the sky is open, there is no cloud. Be in the present. Today it is good to drive it. And once you are in the present, you will become aware of the original sky, which is not set. The original sky is within you. It is not outside. Thousands of miles or millions of miles don't matter. You will never come to the end of the sky outside. But there is a sky inside, which is the original, out of which you are living. You are getting your nourishment. Your roots are in that original sky. Just go inwards, and it is not thousands of miles away. It is only thousands of thoughts away. So it is only a question, reduce the thoughts and mileage is reduced. If you don't have any thoughts, you are in it. You are it. You don't have to go anywhere. You have to simply go on throwing your thoughts. That is the purpose of our gibberish before meditation. Just a time to throw everything without inhibition. These creatures that you throw out are eating your head continuously, destroying your intelligence. Catch them and throw them out. And don't be worried with a moral question that they may enter into somebody else's mind. No, your creatures are accustomed of your mind. Even if you throw them, they will wait on the bamboos. And when you are going to the canteen, they will jump. And you can see in the canteen, I never go there. But so much talk, discussion, all the creatures are back. So beware of the bamboos. Just watch out, they don't enter in your head again. Run! And in canteen, be silent. The more you open your mouth, the more they get in. They know you perfectly well. They will not enter into anybody's. Nobody wants foreigners. strangers. Everybody wants to enter into its own place, into one's own house. You don't enter into somebody else's house. You don't pick up somebody else's rented bicycle. Everybody finds his own rented bicycle into thousands of bicycles. It's strange. Those creatures are very well acquainted with you, and they know how much you love them. What is the guarantee that the other person will be loving towards them? May not be even friendly, and you have been feeding them year after year. So when you are throw far away, that they get mixed up, start fighting with each other, and meanwhile you escape to the canteen. The inner sky is only as far away as many thoughts you have. If you don't have any thoughts, you are just in the present. That's what Dogo means. Today, it is good to drive it. Just be now and here. And without saying anything about the original sky, that is the way of Zen to indicate. If you have intelligence, just indication is enough. If you don't have intelligence, even one goes on hammering on your head, it doesn't matter. He showed him where the original sky is. It is within you if you are in the present. To be in the present is to be out of the mind. To be in the present is to be in the beyond, in the space, in the sky, which is your very being. On another occasion, Dogo was once asked by another monk, "What is the deepest?" Dogo came down from his seat, made obeisance in the manner of woman, and said, "You have come from far, and I have no answer for you." In fact, he has given the answer. What is deepest? Humbleness, gratitude, nobodiness. He is a man, but he bowed down in the manner of a woman. No distinction between man and woman, because it is not a question of body. And a woman is more humble, more grateful, more loving. So he is showing that create the female qualities of love, of gratitude, of compassion, of humbleness, just being nobody. And he came down and made obeisance, bowed to the stranger. He has answered, but because the stranger monk has not understood, that's why he is saying, "You have come from far, and I have no answer for you." If you want an answer in language, I don't have it. This is also out of compassion. He has answered that humbleness is the deepest, nobodiness is the deepest. To be nothing, to be utterly selfless is the deepest. There is no further depth possible. He has given the answer by his action, but the man looked not to understand. It is also out of compassion not to make the man feel embarrassed, not to make him feel that he has not understood. Dogo said, "You have come from very far away, and I have no answer for you." He takes the responsibility on himself that it is not your fault. You have done great work, you have coming from very far, and I don't have any answer for you. He takes the responsibility on himself, although the reality is the strange monk has missed the answer. This is the beauty of a master. It shows in so many different colors, in so many rainbows. Unless you understand it, you will not be able even to see. Just reading it, you would have missed it. At another time, Sekiso Keso asked Dogo, after 100 years, if someone asks about the absolute meaning of the universe, what shall I say to him? You will be gone. After 100 years, you are no more. Otherwise, you could have answered him. Just give me the answer. So if somebody asks the question after you are gone, I can give him your answer, but that is impossible. You cannot give my answer unless it is also your answer. Repeating my answer will be simply borrowed. It won't have life. And it won't have any charisma in it. It won't penetrate the heart of the person. Unless it is alive, throbbing with life and radiant with life and luminous with great energy, coming out of your own experience, then perhaps the other, if he is intelligent enough, meditative enough, receptive enough, may get it. Dogo called the boy attendant who came and told him to fill up the water bottle. He did not pay any attention to Sekiso's question. Not paying attention to Sekiso's question is also an answer. He is saying, don't ask absurd things. Find out the answer yourself by your own experience. My answer is not going to help, so I am not going to give it. So he simply, as if he has not heard, he has heard it perfectly. He calls the boy attendant who came and told him to fill up the water bottle. Dogo waited a while. It was strange. The master is not answering the question. And then said to Sekiso, what was it you asked just now? As if he has not heard. What was it you asked just now, Sekiso repeated the question. Dobo thereupon went back to his room. And at this, Sekiso became enlightened. He had answered first time. Sekiso did not get it. That what he is saying is, don't ask such things which are only available to your own experience alone. But because he did not understand, Dobo waited a while, perhaps he may catch it, and then said to Sekiso, what was it you asked just now? Sekiso repeated the question, that shows he had not understood the answer that has been indicated by Dobo by not paying attention to his question. At this, Dobo thereupon went back to his room without answering him again. This time he got it, that it is not a question which can be answered. You have to go inside your room. The word room is very beautiful. It simply means a space. And you sometimes use it in the sense of a space, that this place has enough room. What do you mean by it? Enough room. Enough space. Not unnecessary furniture. I used to stay with a very rich man in a place called Sagar. He was an accumulator of junk. He has enough money. So all kinds of things, whether he needs them or not, that was not the question. He can afford. There was no television in those days in Sagar. And I used to stay with him, and he has a special guest room filled with all junk, and I saw a television there. I asked, are you mad? There is no television. At that time, it was not even in Bombay, not in New Delhi. Television was not introduced in India. What you are doing with a TV set? He said, I had gone to London and just I liked it. I said, just liked it? He said, sometime television will come. And he was at that time 75 years old. I said, at least not in your lifetime. He said, why? I said, you don't understand that you are 75. But he said, it is not good to say to anybody, not in your lifetime. That means you are already thinking about my death. I said, I am not thinking about your death. I am thinking about your city. It is still 1,000 years old. Even in New Delhi, the television has not come. In your city, it will take at least a century, and I don't think you will be able to make it. But he was very angry. And he said, I had put it for your entertainment. I said, I am not mad. this box cannot make any kind of entertainment. It is dead because there is no connection anywhere to it. And then I saw many radios lying, all kinds of models of radio. I said, one is enough. He said, but I can afford. So whenever some new model comes, some new manufacturer comes in, I said, in this room I cannot stay. I will go insane. Because there is no room at all. Things upon things, things upon things. Just you have to somehow make your way to the bed. And if it is night and there was no electricity there, you cannot even go to the bathroom without having multiple fractures and destroying his many valuable things. So I said, forgive me, you just give me plain room. He said, plain room? I said, yes, because I sometimes go to bathroom also. He said, bathroom is there. I said, in the dark night, there is no electricity, and your room is simply mad. And I will have nightmares here. I cannot tolerate all this, all kinds of clocks, old, ancient, and they all are making noise at different times. No clock is at the same time at other clocks. I said, what do you want, me to sleep or not? He said, you are the first guest who is making so much fuss. I said, I'm not making fuss. I simply want a room. He said, this is a room. I said, you don't understand the meaning of the word room. This is not a room. This is a junkyard. So when the master Dogo went to his room, he is again giving another chance to Sekiso, that just to go into the silent space within you. As I am going into my room, you go into your room, into your own space. And this time Sekiso got it. He became enlightened. The master goes on repeating the same thing in different ways, in different words, in different gestures, with the hope that someday, at some point, you are going to get it. How you can escape? I will go on hitting you from every angle, poking you from every possibility, into every rib. I don't care whether you are getting fractures or not. I will go on hitting you. My hits are more subtle than the Zen people. Their hits are more primitive. So whenever you get upset and disturbed, remember, it is a hit. Yet take a shower and sit down to meditate. No need to think about it. It was just a hit to wake you up. My speaking to you is not that of an orator or that of a philosopher. My talking to you is that of a master who knows how to disturb you. And your function is not to be disturbed. Whatever happens, whatever I say, I may call Jesus a crackpot, don't be worried. Just enjoy and have a good savor if some trouble arises. Because what I have to do with Jesus, my concern is with you. If I see somewhere in your head Jesus lurking, then I immediately hit Jesus. I am hitting you. What concern I have with Jesus? In fact, nobody knows whether this fellow ever was there or not. But when I talk about Stalin, don't get worried. I have nothing to be concerned with Stalin. He is not my disciple. You are. And you are on your own. In spite of me, I am trying every possible way to throw you out. But you still go on coming. You know perfectly well that my words should not be taken at the face value. They are strategies and devices. The whole problem is how to shock you and shatter your mind completely so you can enter into the inner room and see with your own eyes your vast sky. Basso wrote, "A cold rain is starting, and me without a hat on second thought, who cares?" This is the beauty of Zen. A cold rain is starting and me without a hat. On second thought, who cares? Remember it. On second thought, don't care at all about anything. Perhaps on the first thought you may not be able, but on the second thought, don't miss it. Sekiso did not miss on second thoughts. Manisha's question. Our beloved master, Emma Goldman, the anarchist who wrote in one of her revolutionary essays earlier this century, that Friedrich Nietzsche is described as a hater of the weak because he believed in the Superman. It does not occur to the shallow interpreters of that giant mind that this vision of the Superman also calls for a state of society which will not give birth to a race of weaklings and slaves. With the flame of Zen in one hand, you are the completion of the circle of man's search for inner integrity. With the flame of spiritual anarchism in the other hand, are you not also the completion of the circle of man's search for outer integrity? Manisha, Friedrich Nietzsche is one of the most misunderstood giants of mankind. And nobody can feel for him more than I feel, because I am also in the same category, even more misunderstood a man than Friedrich Nietzsche. When I say I hate poverty, people think I hate the poor people. I hate poverty because I want to destroy poverty completely. There will be no poor people when the poverty is destroyed. The same was the situation with Nietzsche when he said, I hate weaklings and I proclaim the coming of the Superman. People misunderstood. They thought that this man is in favor only of the powerful, superior people, and he is against the ordinary, average humanity. That was not the case. Emma Goldman is right. She was one of the few women of history who has a very clear-cut intellectual understanding. Very few women think about great problems. Their world is very limited. The neighborhood. Who has got a new sari? A woman rushed into the house and said to the husband, you have to do either this thing or the other. He said, what? The woman said, the neighbor has purchased a new car. Either you purchase a new car, otherwise change the locality. We will move into some other house. We cannot live in this house. I cannot see in his porch a new car, and in our porch an old Ford. So you be quick. Either find a new house, we move the house, or bring a new Cadillac. The woman's world has been very limited. It has been made limited by a man, but the woman is also responsible. She accepted it. When somebody enslaves you, of course, that person is responsible, but don't think that you are not responsible. You are also responsible. You could have died instead of becoming an slave. Then how he could have made you a slave? So whenever there is such a phenomenon, people only think with compassion and pity about the victim, but they don't think that the victim somehow agrees with the status quo. Otherwise, if all the women go just for one day strike all over the world, men will be massaging their feet. That you are not only equal, you are superior. Just come back to the kitchen. I know about myself. I cannot even make a cup of tea. I have tried and burned myself. Just once was enough. Then I said, it is not my thing. Have you ever thought, if you have to sleep with your little baby, what is going to happen in the night? Either you will throw the baby out of the window, because these small babies are such rascals, you won't believe. They will sleep the whole day and they will keep awake the whole night. And
every moment they want this and they want that. And if nothing else, they want to go to the bathroom. They will drive you just within one night crazy. Either you will suit yourself or throw the baby and have a peaceful night. The woman is immensely patient. She has no problems. What will happen when Third World War happens? Who cares? Right now the question is that the husband has not come home. Where he is? With which woman? She is just figuring out all the women that she knows. And when the husband comes back in the middle of the night, she immediately inquires, "Where you have been?" And he said, "I was with my friend such and such." And the wife has all information. She has phoned all the friends. That friend is not at home. "So where you have been? Be truthful and honest. I have inquired. I have your diary, all phone numbers. That fellow is not at home. Where you have been?" Now you are caught red-handed. Nobody can escape a wife's scrutiny. I have never heard a single man who has escaped the scrutiny of a wife. They are such great detectives that sometimes I think they should all enroll in CIA, in FBI, in CID. They will do far greater work. Their concern is so limited, so their whole concentration very few women like Emma Goldman have ever thought about such problems like anarchism. She was really a rare woman. No husband could tolerate her. She was too intellectual. Every husband will feel inferior to her. She is perfectly right about Friedrich Nietzsche, that when he talked about Superman and he said, "I hate the weaklings," people have missed the point. They think he is a hater of the average humanity and only wants Superman, superior quality, intellectual giants. That is not the case. In his conception of the Superman and the society that will come with the Superman will not allow weaklings to be born. That's exactly my conception too. And I am being criticized all around the world because I have been talking about that men should not be allowed anymore to give birth to accidental children. Up to now, the whole humanity is accidental. Now we have every means to choose the right child. We can create the humanity in which everybody will be a superman. Nietzsche was only intellectual, a great intellectual, perhaps the greatest. I have left intellect far behind. I use it just for you. In my vision, we don't have to wait for biological engineering to create the Superman. It will go against all the masses, all the societies, all the religions will become hindrances. They won't allow that. Because I have proposed it, I am being criticized. I have received from all over the world criticism of my book that I am a fascist, just like Friedrich Nietzsche was a fascist. But they don't understand me. Neither they understood Friedrich Nietzsche. And they will not understand me even more. Because I am not going to wait for biological engineering. I am going to create the Superman by a very different methodology. My methodology is meditation. I can change the ordinary, average human being into a Buddha. There is no need right now to go into changing the ordinary structure of reproduction. Finally, it has to be done, because that will be the easiest way. And if I have Superman to work with, then meditation will be so easy, immediately understood. But Friedrich Nietzsche has no idea about meditation. I can change through meditation the very ordinary and average person into a superman. The moment you enter into your being center, silent, the whole sky within has no clouds of thought. You are turning into a superman. I call that superman the Buddha. Manisha, you are right, because I am looking at man from every angle. From his body, from his mind, from his soul. I am looking at man as a totality. So many half circles are going to be complete in me. Because Buddha was looking only about the spiritual. Marx was looking only about the material. Sigmund Freud was looking about only the psychological. My approach is total, from all dimensions, directions. And I have gone through all these people as deeply as possible. And I know where they stand, where they have stopped. Nietzsche has stopped on intellectual analysis. Sigmund Freud has stopped on psychoanalysis. Marx has stopped on economic analysis of the society. But man is not partial. Don't deal with man as part by part. You can deal with a machine in a partial way. You can change one part if it is not functioning well. But man is an organic unity. You cannot do that with man. You have to take the whole man into your vision. And my vision is for the whole man. And the moment you also understand all your dimensions, all your directions, all your potentialities, suddenly a great transformation happens. The Superman is born in you. You don't have to wait, because you cannot change now your programming of biology. Perhaps your children's children may gather courage enough to change the biology of man. When I am talking to you, I am taking care not only about you, but about your children's children's children. My approach is not only concerned with you. It is certainly concerned with you, but not only with you. My vision reaches far deeper. I am saying many things which should be said only one century after. That's what creates controversies about me, unnecessary condemnation about me. But I am helpless. In fact, I enjoy all the controversies, all the condemnation. At this moment in the whole world, I am the most condemned man. That gives me great joy. At least I am something. This brings to Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Giuseppe and Martino, two Italians, are at the movie house watching a spaghetti western and feeling bored. Martino leans over in the dark and taps his friend on the arm. "Here, Giuseppe," whispers Martino, "I'm really bored. You see this guy in front with the bald head? I give you 1,000 lira if you smack him over the head." Giuseppe immediately takes the money, stands up and hits the bald man in front, paw, over the head. The man turns around in a daze. "Here, Francesco," says Giuseppe. "Good to see you." "I am not a Francesco," replies the man shakily, and he turns back to watching the movie. 5 minutes pass and Martino is bored again. "Here, Giuseppe," he whispers, "I give you 2,000 lira if you hit the bald guy again." Giuseppe takes the money, stands up and hits the bald-headed man, bong, on the head. The bald man spins around and is just about to climb over the back of his seat when Giuseppe says, "Here, Francesco." Good to see you. I tell you, snaps the bald man, I am not a Francesco. And he storms out and goes and sits upstairs in the balcony. 10 minutes later, Martino is bored again. Here, Giuseppe, he whispers, I am a bold. Let's go upstairs. The two friends go to sit in the balcony just behind the bald-headed man. Here, Giuseppe, whispers Martino, I give you 10,000 lira if you hit the man with the bald head again. Giuseppe puts the money into his pocket, gets to his feet and hits the bald head smack with his hand. The man spins around in his seat. Here, Francesco, says Giuseppe, you know, downstairs there is a guy that looks just like you. One day, Joseph Stalin wants to find out what the people of Russia really think about him. So he disguises himself with a big black beard and an overcoat and goes out into the streets of Moscow. He walks around for a while and then goes into a favorite communist pub, the Tsar's Head. He walks up to the bar, orders a double vodka and begins to sip it slowly. Then he turns to the man next to him, Comrade Popov, and casually asks, tell me, comrade, what do you think of Joseph Stalin? Comrade Popov turns white, looks over both shoulders, grabs Stalin by the arm and whispers, are you crazy? We can't talk here. Follow me. The two Russians go outside through the back door into the quiet back street. Popov looks around frantically, then leads Stalin into a dark alley. Then Popov looks around and says, we are still not safe here. These walls have ears. Come with me. He takes Stalin through a maze of unlit passages and side streets before arriving at a small hidden garden. They climb over the fence and finally crouch behind some bushes. Okay, says Popo, we can talk here. You want to know what I think of Joseph Stalin? That's right, replies Stalin. Well, says Popo, I could not say it in the pub, but personally, I like the guy. Igor and Becky Ivanovich, a Moscow couple, keeps a parrot called Boris in their apartment. Boris likes to cry, down with communism, at the top of his voice. And one day, the neighbors hear him and report him to the KGB. When the police arrive, Igor quickly hides Boris in the freezer. The KGB officers search everywhere throughout the apartment and cannot find anything. But just before they leave, one of them decides to have a look in the freezer and finds a frozen Boris. When Boris finally thaws out, he starts shouting at the top of his voice, "Hurray for Gorbachev! Long live communism!" The KGB men are very happy and leave the apartment. When they are gone, Igor grabs Boris. "I don't understand," says Igor. "Why did you suddenly start praising communism?" "Look," replies Boris, "you would do the same if you had just returned from Siberia." Your body to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to look inwards. Gather your whole life energy and rush towards your very center of being with total consciousness and with an urgency as if this is going to be the last moment in your life. Without such urgency, nobody has ever reached to his very being, the center, which is your original face, which is your door into the divine. Faster and faster, deeper and deeper, as you come closer to yourself, a great silence descends over you. Almost like soft rain. A little more closer, and you find a tremendous peace blossoming around you. A little more. And fragrances from the beyond fulfill your being. Now you can see your original face. This is the Buddha, hidden at the center of your being for centuries. This is your Superman. The only quality of the Buddha is witnessing. And as your witnessing deepens, your blissfulness deepens also. As your witnessing becomes greater, a tremendous ecstasy arises in your very being. It is not something coming from out. It is something that is arising in you and blossoming in you like a lotus flower. But it all happens, this whole miracle of meditation is nothing but witnessing a single word, and the whole religion is intrinsic in it. At this moment, you are the most blessed people on the earth to make the witnessing a little more deeper. Nivedana, relax, let go. Just continue to witness. Witness that you are not the body. Witness that you are not the mind. Witness that you are only a witness. Just a Buddha. A pure consciousness. An eternal life suddenly becomes clear to you. You have been changing bodies again and again and again, but your life goes on flowing from eternity to eternity. It is infinite. It is immortal. And as you relax, you start melting like ice. All separations dissolve. Gautam, the Buddha auditorium, suddenly becomes an ocean of 10,000 Buddhas melting their consciousness into oneness, without any waves, without any ripples. The evening was very beautiful on its own, but your totality, your urgency, your tremendous longing to reach to the center has made it a miraculous evening. A great splendor meditation is the only magic in the world and the only miracle. Before Nivedana calls you back, gather all the flowers that are showering on you of ecstasy, of joy, of peace, of a deep serenity, silence. A fire within you, the fire of eternal life, which is very cool, and a breeze which is so fragrant of the beyond. This I have called Zen fire, Zen wind. We have to fill the whole earth with Zen fire and Zen wind. This is the only possibility for saving the humanity and this beautiful planet from destruction, from the politicians and from the priests. And don't forget to persuade the Buddha to come with you, he has to become your daily life. In each of your activity, in every of your gestures, in every birth, in every silence, he has to be a constant presence just behind you. Just his presence behind you will start changing your lifestyle. It will bring grace and beauty and benediction and compassion that you have never dreamt of. Meditation makes the greatest dream a reality. Nivedana, come back, but come back as Buddhas, silently, peacefully, with deep gratitude and great grace. Sit down for a few seconds just to remember where you have been, to what sky, to what space, what golden path you have travel, and just feel who is behind you, the presence of the Buddha. These are the three steps before you become enlightened. Buddha comes behind you like a shadow. First step. Buddha comes before you and you become the shadow. Second step. Your shadow disappears in the Buddha. You are no more, only Buddha is. The third and the final step. The moment your shadow disappears in the Buddha, you will find suddenly Buddha is only a transparent consciousness. When there is something transparent, it makes no shadow. And Buddha is your very nature. So there is not much problem to bring him from the hidden sources and to make him your whole being. He is just a seed at the center. As you bring it out, the seed breaks down. And suddenly, out of your mud, dirty mud, of all kinds of desires, jealousies, anger, violence, arises a beautiful lotus. This lotus is the flowering of your very potential. This will make you a superman. Nietzsche can only talk about you. I can transform you into the superman. Superman is my very teaching. I teach you the Superman, the Buddha. I don't give you any discipline, any philosophy. I simply help you to bring out your own consciousness into a state of flowering. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, beloved Master.